Aro touched Caius's shoulder lightly. Irina has been punished for bearing false witness against this child. So that was to be their excuse. He went on. Perhaps we should return to the matter at hand. Caius straightened, and his expression hardened into unreadability. He stared forward, seeing nothing. His face reminded me, oddly, of a person who just learned he'd been demoted. Aro drifted forward, Renata, Felix, and Dimitri automatically moving with him. Just to be thorough, he said, I'd like to speak with a few of your witnesses. Procedure, you know. He waved a hand dismissively. Two things happened at once. Caius's eyes focused on Aro, and the tiny, cruel smile came back. And Edward hissed, his hands balling up in fists so tight it looked like the bones in his knuckles would split through his diamond-hard skin. I was desperate to ask him what was going on, but Aro was close enough to hear even the quietest breath. I saw Carla glance anxiously at Edward's face, and then his own face hardened. While Caius had blundered through useless accusations and injudicious attempts to trigger the fight, Aro must have been coming up with a more effective strategy. Aro ghosted across the snow to the far western end of our line, stopping about 10 yards from Amon and Kebby. The nearby wolves bristled angrily, but held their positions. Ah, Amon, my southern neighbor, Aro said warmly. It has been so long since you visited me. Amon was motionless with anxiety, Kebby a statue at his side. Time means little. I never notice its passing, Amon said through unmoving lips. So true, Aro agreed. But maybe you had another reason to stay away. Amon said nothing. It can be terribly time-consuming to organize newcomers into a coven. I know that well. I'm grateful I have others to deal with the tedium. I'm glad your new additions have fit in so well. I would have loved to have been introduced. I'm sure you are meaning to come to see me soon. Of course, Amon said, his tone so emotionless that it was impossible to tell if there was any fear or sarcasm in his assent. Oh, well, we're all together now. Isn't it lovely? Amon nodded, his face blank. But the reason for your presence here is not as pleasant, unfortunately. Carlyle called on you to witness? Yes. And what did you witness for him? Amon spoke with the same cold lack of emotion. I have observed the child in question. It was evident almost immediately that she was not an immortal child. Perhaps we should define our terminology, Aro interrupted, now that there seem to be new classifications. By immortal child, you mean, of course, a human child who had been bitten and thus transformed into a vampire. Yes, that's what I meant. What else did you observe about the child? The same things that you surely saw in Edward's mind, that the child is his biologically, that she grows, that she learns. Yes, yes, Aro said, a hint of impatience in his otherwise amiable tone. But specifically, in your few weeks here, what did you see? Amon's brow furrowed. That she grows quickly, Aro smiled. And do you believe that she should be allowed to live? A hiss escaped my lips, and I was not alone. Half the vampires in our line echoed my protest. The sound was a low sizzle of fury hanging in the air. Across the meadow, a few of the Volturi witnesses made the same noise. Edward stepped back and wrapped a restraining hand around my wrist. Aro did not turn to the noise, but Amon glanced around uneasily. I did not come to make judgments, he equivocated. Aro laughed lightly. Just your opinion. Amon's chin lifted. I see no danger in the child. She learns even more swiftly than she grows. Aro nodded, considering. After a moment, he turned away. Aro, Amon called. Aro whirled back. Yes, friend? I gave my witness. I have no more business here. My maid and I would like to take our leave now. Aro smiled warmly. Of course. I'm so glad we were able to chat for a bit, and I'm sure we'll see each other again soon. Amon's lips were a tight line as he inclined his head once, acknowledging the barely concealed threat. He touched Kebby's arm, and then the two of them ran quickly to the southern edge of the meadow and disappeared into the trees. I knew they wouldn't stop running for a very long time. Aro was gliding back along the length of our line to the east, his guards hovering tensely. He stopped when he was in front of Siobhan's massive form. "Hello, dear Siobhan. You are as lovely as ever." Siobhan inclined her head, waiting. "And you?" he asked. "Would you answer my questions the same way Amon has?" "I would," Siobhan said. "But I would perhaps add a little more. Renesmee understands the limitations. She's no danger to humans. She blends in better than we do. She poses no threat of exposure." "Can you think of none?" Aro asked soberly. Edward growled, a low ripping sound deep in his throat. Caius's cloudy crimson eyes brightened. Renata reached out protectively toward her master, and Garrett freed Kate to take a step forward, ignoring Kate's hand as she tried to caution him this time. Siobhan answered slowly, "I don't think I follow you." Aro drifted lightly back, casually, but toward the rest of his guard. Renata, Felix, and Dimitri were closer than his shadow. "There is no broken law," Aro said in a placating voice, but every one of us could hear that a qualification was coming. I fought back the rage that tried to claw its way up my throat and snarl out my defiance. I hurled the fury into my shield, thickening it, making sure everyone was protected. "No broken law," Aro repeated. "However, does it follow then that there is no danger?" "No," he shook his head gently. "That is a separate issue." The only response was the tightening of already stretched nerves, and Maggie, at the fringes of our band of fighters, shaking her head with slow anger. Aro paced thoughtfully, looking as if he floated rather than touched the ground with his feet. I noticed every pass took him closer to the protection of his guard. "She is unique, utterly and possibly unique. Such a waste it would be to destroy something so lovely, especially when we could learn so much." He sighed, as if unwilling to go on. "But there is danger. Danger that cannot simply be ignored." No one answered his assertion. He was dead silent as he continued in a monologue that sounded as if he spoke it for himself only. "How ironic it is that as the humans advance, as their faith in science grows and controls their world, the more free we are from discovery. Yet as we become ever more uninhibited by their disbelief in the supernatural, they become strong enough in their technologies that, if they wished, they could actually pose a threat to us, even destroy some of us. For thousands and thousands of years, our secrecy has been more a matter of convenience, of ease, than of actual safety. This last raw, angry century has given birth to weapons of such power that they endanger even immortals. Now our status is mere myth. In truth, protects us from these weak creatures we hunt. This amazing child." He lifted his hand, palm down, as if to rest it on Renesmee. Though he was 40 yards from her now, almost within the Volturi formation again. "If we could but know her potential, know with absolute certainty that she could always remain shrouded within the obscurity that protects us. But we know nothing of what she will become. Her own parents are plagued by fears of her future. We cannot know what she will grow to be." He paused, looking first at our witnesses and then meaningfully at his own. His voice gave a good imitation of sounding torn by his words. Still looking at his own witnesses, he spoke again. "Only the known is safe. Only the known is tolerable. The unknown is a vulnerability." Caius's smile widened viciously. "You're reaching, Aro," Carlyle said in a bleak voice. Peace, friend, Aro smiled. His face is kind, his voice as gentle as ever. Let us not be hasty. Let us look at this from every side.
May I offer a side to be considered? Garrett petitioned in a level tone, taking another step forward.
Nomad, Aro said, nodding in permission. Garrett's chin lifted. His eyes focused on the huddled mass at the end of the meadow, and he spoke directly to the Volturi witnesses.
I came here at Carlyle's request, as the others, to witness, he said. That is certainly no longer necessary with regard to the child. We all see what she is. I stayed to witness something else. You.
He jabbed his finger toward the wary vampires.
Two of you I know, McKenna, Charles, and I can see that many of you others are also wanderers, roamers like myself, answering to none. Think carefully on what I tell you now. These ancient ones did not come here for justice as they told you. We suspected as much, and now it has been proved. They came, misled, but with a valid excuse for their action. Witness now as they seek flimsy excuses to continue their true mission. Witness them struggle to find a justification for their true purpose. To destroy this family here. He gestured toward Carlyle and Tanya. The Volturi come to erase what they perceive as the competition. Perhaps like me, you look at this clan's golden eyes and marvel. They are difficult to understand, it's true. But the Ancient Ones look and see something besides their strange choice. They see power. I have witnessed the bonds within this family. I say family and not coven. These strange golden-eyed ones deny their very natures. But in return, have they found something worth even more, perhaps than mere gratification of desire? I've made a little study of them in my time here, and it seems to me that intrinsic to this intense family binding, that which makes them possible at all, is the peaceful character of this life of sacrifice. There is no aggression here like we all saw in the large southern clans that grew and diminished so quickly in their wild feuds. There is no thought for domination, and Aro knows this better than I do. I watched Aro's face as Garrett's words condemned him, waiting tensely for some response. But Aro's face was only politely amused, as if waiting for a tantrum-throwing child to realize that no one was paying attention to his histrionics. Carlyle assured us all, when he told us what was coming, that he did not call us here to fight. These witnesses, Garrett pointed to Siobhan and Liam, agreed to give evidence, to slow the Volturi advance with their presence so that Carlyle would get the chance to present his case. But some of us wondered, his eyes flashed to Eliezer's face, if Carlyle having truth on his side would be enough to stop the so-called justice. Are the Volturi here to protect the safety of our secrecy, or to protect their own power? Did they come to destroy an illegal creation, or a way of life? Could they be satisfied when the danger turned out to be no more than a misunderstanding? Or would they push the issue without the excuse of justice? We have the answer to all these questions. We heard it in Aro's lying words. We have one with a gift of knowing such things for certain. And we see it now in Caius's eager smile. Their guard is just a mindless weapon, a tool in their master's quest for domination. So now there are more questions, questions that you must answer. Who rules you, nomads? Do you answer to someone's will besides your own? Are you free to choose your path, or will the Volturi decide how you will live? I came to witness. I stay to fight. The Volturi care nothing for the death of the child. They seek the death of our free will. He turned then to face the ancients. So come, I say. Let's hear no more lying rationalizations. Be honest in your intents, as we will be honest in ours. We will defend our freedom. You will or will not attack it. Choose now, and let these witnesses see the true issue debated here. Once more he looked to the Volturi witnesses, his eyes probing each face. The power of his words was evident in their expressions. You might consider joining us. If you think the Volturi will let you live to tell this tale, you are mistaken. We may all be destroyed, he shrugged. But then again, maybe not. Perhaps we are on more equal footing than they know. Perhaps the Volturi have finally met their match. I promise you this, though. If we fall, so do you. He ended his heated speech by stepping back to Kate's side and then sliding forward in a half-crouch, prepared for the onslaught. Aro smiled. A very pretty speech, my revolutionary friend. Garrett remained poised for attack. Revolutionary? He growled. Who am I revolting against, might I ask? Are you my king? Do you wish me to call you master, too, like your sycophantic guard? Peace, Garrett, Aro said tolerantly. I meant only to refer to your time of birth. Still a patriot, I see. Garrett glared back furiously. Let us ask our witnesses, Aro suggested. Let us hear their thoughts before we make our decision. Tell us, friends. And he turned his back casually on us, moving a few yards toward his mass of nervous observers hovering even closer now to the edge of the forest. What do you think of all this? I can assure you the child is not what we feared. Do we take the risk and let the child live? Do we put our world in jeopardy to preserve their family intact? Or does Ernest Garrett have the right of it? Will you join them in a fight against our sudden quest for dominion? The witnesses met his gaze with careful faces. One, a small black-haired woman, looked briefly at the dark blonde male at her side. Are those our only choices? She asked suddenly, gaze flashing back to Aro. Agree with you, or fight against you? Of course not, most charming McKenna, Aro said, appearing horrified that anyone could come to that conclusion. You may go in peace, of course, as Amon did, even if you disagree with the council's decision. McKenna looked at her mate's face again, and he nodded minutely. We did not come here for a fight. She paused, exhaled, then said, We came here to witness, and our witness is that this condemned family is innocent. Everything that Garrett claimed is the truth. Ah, Aro said sadly, I'm sorry you see us in that way. But such is the nature of our work. It is not what I see, but what I feel, McKenna's maize-haired mate spoke in a high, nervous voice. He glanced at Garrett. Garrett said they have ways of knowing lies. I, too, know when I am hearing the truth and when I am not. With frightened eyes, he moved closer to his mate, waiting for Aro's reaction. Do not fear us, friend Charles. No doubt the patriot truly believes what he says. Aro chuckled lightly, and Charles's eyes narrowed. That is our witness, McKenna said. We're leaving now. She and Charles backed away slowly, not turning before they were lost from view in the trees. One other stranger began to retreat the same way, then three more darted after him. I evaluated the 37 vampires that stayed. A few of them appeared just too confused to make the decision, but the majority of them seemed only too aware of the direction this confrontation had taken. I guess that they were giving up a head start in favor of knowing exactly who would be chasing after them. I was sure Aro saw the same thing I did. He turned away, walking back to his guard with a measured pace. He stopped in front of them and addressed them in a clear voice. We are outnumbered, dearest ones. He said. We can expect no outside help. Should we leave this question undecided to save ourselves? No, Master, they whispered in unison. Is the protection of our world worth perhaps the loss of some of our number? Yes, they breathed. We are not afraid. Aro smiled and turned to his black-clad companions. Brothers, Aro said somberly. There is much to consider here. Let us counsel, Caius said eagerly. Let us counsel, Marcus repeated in an uninterested tone. Aro turned his back to us again, facing the other ancients. They joined hands to form a black-shrouded triangle. As soon as Aro's attention was engaged in the silent council, two more of their witnesses disappeared silently into the forest. I hoped for their sakes that they were fast. This was it. Carefully, I loosened Renesmee's arms from my neck. You remember what I told you? Tears welled in her eyes, but she nodded. I love you, she whispered. Edward was watching us now, his topaz eyes wide. Jacob stared at us from the corner of his big dark eye. I love you too, I said, and then I touched her locket. More than my own life. I kissed her forehead. Jacob whined uneasily. I stretched up on my toes and whispered into his ear. Wait until they're totally distracted, then run with her. Get as far from this place as you possibly can. When you've gone as far as you can on foot, she has what you need to get you in the air. Edward's and Jacob's faces were almost identical masks of horror, despite the fact that one of them was an animal. Renesmee reached for Edward, and he took her in his arms. They hugged each other tightly. This is what you kept from me? He whispered over her head. From Aro, I breathed. Alice? I nodded. His face twisted with understanding and pain. Had that been the expression on my face when I'd finally put together Alice's clues? Jacob was growling quietly, a low rasp that was as even and unbroken as a purr. His hackles were stiff and his teeth exposed. Edward kissed Renesmee's forehead and both her cheeks. Then he lifted her to Jacob's shoulder. She scrambled agilely onto his back, pulling herself into place with handfuls of his fur, and fit herself easily into the dip between his massive shoulder blades. Jacob turned to me, his expressive eyes full of agony, the rumbling growl still grating through his chest. You're the only one we could ever trust her with, I murmured to him. If you didn't love her so much, I could never bear this. I know you can protect her, Jacob. He whined again and dipped his head to butt it against my shoulder. I know, I whispered. I love you too, Jake. You'll always be my best man. A tear the size of a baseball rolled into the russet fur beneath his eye. Edward leaned his head against the same shoulder where he'd placed Renesmee. Goodbye, Jacob, my brother, my son. The others were not oblivious to the farewell scene. Their eyes were locked on the silent black triangle, but I could tell they were listening. Is there no hope then? Carlyle whispered. There was no fear in his voice, just determination and acceptance. There is absolutely hope, I murmured back. It could be true, I told myself. I only know my own fate. Edward took my hand. He knew that he was included. When I said my fate, there was no question that I meant the two of us. We were just halves of the whole. Esme's breath was ragged behind me. She moved past us, touching our faces as she passed, to stand beside Carlyle and hold his hand. Suddenly, we were surrounded by murmured goodbyes and I love yous. If we live through this, Garrett whispered to Kate, I'll follow you anywhere, woman. Now he tells me, she muttered. Rosalie and Emmett kissed quickly but passionately. Tia caressed Benjamin's face. He smiled back cheerfully, catching her hand and holding it against his cheek. I didn't see all the expressions of love and pain. I was distracted by a sudden fluttering pressure against the outside of my shield. I couldn't tell where it came from, but it felt like it was directed at the edges of our group, Siobhan and Liam particularly. The pressure did no damage, and then it was gone. There was no change in the silent, still forms of the counseling ancients, but perhaps there was some signal I'd missed. Get ready, I whispered to the others. It's starting. Chapter 38, Power. Chelsea is trying to break our bindings, Edward whispered. But she can't find them. She can't feel us here. His eyes cut to me. Are you doing that? I smiled grimly at him. I am all over this. Edward lurched away from me suddenly, his hand reaching out toward Carlyle. At the same time, I felt a much sharper jab against the shield where it wrapped protectively around Carlyle's light. It wasn't painful, but it wasn't pleasant either. "Carlyle, are you all right?" Edward gasped frantically. "Yes, why?" "Jane," Edward answered. The moment that he said her name, a dozen pointed attacks hit in a second, stabbing all over the elastic shield, aimed at 12 different bright spots. I flexed, making sure the shield was undamaged. It didn't seem like Jane had been able to pierce it. I glanced around quickly. Everyone was fine. "Incredible," Edward said. "Why aren't they waiting for the decision?" Tanya hissed. "Normal procedure," Edward answered brusquely. "They usually incapacitate those on trial so they can't escape." I looked across at Jane, who was staring at our group with furious disbelief. I was pretty sure that, besides me, she'd never seen anyone remain standing through her fiery assault. It probably wasn't very mature, but I figured it would take Aro about half a second to guess, if he hadn't already, that my shield was more powerful than Edward had known. I already had a big target on my forehead, and there was really no point in trying to keep the extent of what I could do a secret. So I grinned a huge, smug smile right at Jane. Her eyes narrowed, and I felt another stab of pressure, this time directed at me. I pulled my lips wider, showing my teeth. Jane let out a high-pitched scream of a snarl. Everyone jumped, even the disciplined guard. Everyone but the ancients, who didn't so much as look up from their conference. Her twin caught her arm as she crouched to spring. The Romanian started chuckling with dark anticipation. "I told you this was our time," Vladimir said to Stefan. "Just look at the witch's face," Stefan chortled. Alec patted his sister's shoulder soothingly, then tucked her under his arm. He turned his face to us, perfectly smooth, completely angelic. I waited for some pressure, some sign of his attack, but I felt nothing. He continued to stare in our direction, his pretty face composed. Was he attacking? Was he getting through my shield? Was I the only one who could still see him? I clutched at Edward's hand. "Are you okay?" I choked out. "Yes," he whispered. "Is Alec trying?" Edward nodded. "His gift is slower than Jane's. It creeps. It will touch us in a few seconds." I saw it then, when I had a clue of what to look for. A strange clear haze was oozing across the snow, nearly invisible against the white. It reminded me of a mirage, a slight warping of the view, a hint of a shimmer. I pushed my shield out from Carlyle and the rest of the front line, afraid to have the slinking mist too close when it hit. What if it stole right through my intangible protection? Should we run? A low rumbling murmured through the ground under our feet, and a gust of wind blew the snow into sudden flurries between our position and the Volturi's. Benjamin had seen the creeping threat too, and now he tried to blow the mist away from us. The snow made it easy to see where he threw the wind, but the mist didn't react in any way. It was like air blowing harmlessly through a shadow. The shadow was immune. The triangular formation of the ancients finally broke apart when, with a racking groan, a deep, narrow fissure opened in a long zigzag across the middle of the clearing. The earth rocked under my feet for a moment. The drifts of snow plummeted into the hole, but the mist skipped right across it, as untouched by gravity as it had been by wind. Aro and Caius watched the opening earth with wide eyes. Marcus looked in the same direction without emotion. They didn't speak, they waited too as the mist approached us. The wind shrieked louder but didn't change the course of the mist. Jane was smiling now. And then the mist hit a wall. I could taste it as soon as it touched my shield. It had a dense, sweet, cloying flavor. It made me remember dimly the numbness of Novocaine on my tongue. The mist curled upward, seeking a breach, a weakness. It found none. The fingers of searching haze twisted upward and around, trying to find a way in, and in the process, illustrating the astonishing size of the protective screen. There were gasps on both sides of Benjamin's gorge. "Well done, Bella," Benjamin cheered in a low voice. My smile returned. I could see Alec's narrowed eyes, doubt on his face for the first time as his mist swirled harmlessly around the edges of my shield. And then I knew that I could do this. Obviously, I would be the number one priority, the first one to die. But as long as I held, we were on more than equal footing with the Volturi. We still had Benjamin and Zafrina. They had no supernatural help at all. As long as I held. "I'm going to have to concentrate," I whispered to Edward. "When it comes to hand, it's going to be harder to keep the shield around the right people."
"I'll keep them off you."
"No, you have to get to Dimitri. Zafrina will keep them away from me." Zafrina nodded solemnly.
"No one will touch this young one," she promised Edward.
"I'd go after Jane and Alec myself, but I can do more good here."
"Jane's mine," Kate hissed. "She needs a taste of her own medicine. And Alec owes me many lives, but I will settle for his," Vladimir growled from the other side. "He's mine."
"I just want Caius," Tanya said evenly. The others started divvying up opponents too, but they were quickly interrupted. Aro, staring calmly at Alec's ineffective mist, finally spoke.
"Before we vote," he began.
I shook my head angrily. I was tired of this charade. The bloodlust was igniting in me again, and I was sorry that I would help the others more by standing still. I wanted to fight.
"Let me remind you," Aro continued. "Whatever the council's decision, there need be no violence here."
Edward snarled out a dark laugh. Aro stared at him sadly.
"It will be a regrettable waste to our kind to lose any of you. But you especially, young Edward, and your newborn mate. The Volturi would be glad to welcome many of you into our ranks. Bella, Benjamin, Zafrina, Kate. There are many choices before you. Consider them."
Chelsea's attempt to sway us fluttered impotently against my shield. Aro's gaze swept across our hard eyes, looking for any indication of hesitation. From his expression, he found none. I knew he was desperate to keep Edward and me, to imprison us the way he had hoped to enslave Alice. But this fight was too big. He would not win if I lived. I was fiercely glad to be so powerful that I left him no way not to kill me.
"Let us vote, then," he said with apparent reluctance.
Caius spoke with eager haste.
"The child is an unknown quantity. There is no reason to allow such a risk to exist. It must be destroyed, along with all who protect it."
He smiled in expectation. I fought back a shriek of defiance to answer his cruel smirk. Marcus lifted his uncaring eyes, seeming to look through us as he voted.
"I see no immediate danger. The child is safe enough for now. We can always reevaluate later. Let us leave in peace."
His voice was even fainter than his brother's feathery sighs. None of the guard relaxed their ready positions at his disagreeing words. Caius's anticipatory grin did not falter. It was as if Marcus hadn't spoken at all.
"I must make the deciding vote, it seems," Aro mused.
Suddenly, Edward stiffened at my side.
"Yes," he hissed.
I risked a glance at him. His face glowed with an expression of triumph that I didn't understand. It was the expression an angel of destruction might wear while the world burned. Beautiful and terrifying. There was a low reaction from the guard, an uneasy murmur.
"Aro?" Edward called, nearly shouted, undisguised victory in his voice.
Aro hesitated for a second, assessing this new mood warily before he answered.
Yes, Edward? You have something further?
Perhaps, Edward said pleasantly, controlling his unexplained excitement. First, if I could clarify one point.
Certainly, Aro said, raising his eyebrows, nothing now but polite interest in his tone.
My teeth ground together. Aro was never more dangerous than when he was gracious.
The danger you foresee from my daughter, this stems entirely from our inability to guess how she will develop. That is the crux of the matter?
Yes, friend Edward, Aro agreed. If we could but be positive, be sure that, as she grows, she will be able to stay concealed from the human world, not endanger the safety of our obscurity.
He trailed off, shrugging.
So if we could only know for sure, Edward suggested, exactly what she will become, then there would be no need for a council at all.
If there was some way to be absolutely sure, Aro agreed, his feathery voice slightly more shrill. He couldn't see where Edward was leading him. Neither could I.
Then yes, there would be no question to debate.
And we would part in peace, good friends, once again? Edward asked with a hint of irony.
Even more shrill.
Of course, my young friend. Nothing would please me more.
Edward chuckled exultantly. Then I do have something more to offer.
Aro's eyes narrowed.
She is absolutely unique. Her future can only be guessed at.
Not absolutely unique, Edward disagreed. Rare, certainly, but not one of a kind.
I fought the shock, the sudden hope springing to life as it threatened to distract me. The sickly-looking mist still swirled around the edges of my shield. And as I struggled to focus, I felt again the sharp, stabbing pressure against my protective hold.
Aro, would you ask Jane to stop attacking my wife? Edward asked courteously.
We are still discussing evidence.
Aro raised one hand.
Peace, dear ones. Let us hear him out.
The pressure disappeared. Jane bared her teeth at me. I couldn't help grinning back at her.
Why don't you join us, Alice? Edward called loudly.
Alice? Esme whispered in shock.
Alice! 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 Alice!
Alice!
Alice! Other voices murmured around me.
Alice! Aro breathed.
Relief and violent joy surged through me. It took all my will to keep the shield where it was. Alex's mist still tested, seeking a weakness. Jane would see if I left any holes.
And then I heard them running through the forest, flying, closing the distance as quickly as they could with no slowing effort at silence.
Both sides were motionless in expectation. The Volturi witnesses scowled in fresh confusion. Then Alice danced into the clearing from the southwest, and I felt like the bliss of seeing her face again might knock me off my feet.
Jasper was only inches behind her, his sharp eyes fierce.
Close after them ran three strangers. The first was a tall, muscular female with wild, dark hair, obviously Kachiri. She had the same elongated limbs and features as the other Amazons, even more pronounced in her case. The next was a small, olive-toned female vampire, with a long braid of black hair bobbing against her back. Her deep burgundy eyes flitted nervously around the confrontation before her. And the last was a young man, not quite as fast nor quite as fluid in his run. His skin was an impossible rich dark brown. His wary eyes flashed across the gathering, and they were the color of warm teak. His hair was black and braided too, like the woman's, though not as long. He was beautiful. As he neared us, a new sound sent shockwaves through the watching crowd. The sound of another heartbeat, accelerated with exertion. Alice leaped lightly over the edges of the dissipating mist that lapped at my shield and came to a sinuous stop at Edward's side. I reached out to touch her arm, and so did Edward, Esme, Carlyle. There wasn't time for any other welcome. Jasper and the others followed her through the shield. All the guard watched, speculation in their eyes, as the latecomers crossed the invisible border without difficulty. The brawny ones, Felix and the others like him, focused their suddenly hopeful eyes on me. They had not been sure of what my shield repelled, but it was clear now that it would not stop a physical attack. As soon as Aro gave the order, the blitz would ensue, me the only object. I wondered how many Zafrina would be able to blind, and how much that would slow them. Long enough for Kate and Vladimir to take Jane and Alec out of the equation? That was all I could ask for. Edward, despite his absorption in the coup he was directing, stiffened furiously in response to their thoughts. He controlled himself and spoke to Aro again. Alice has been searching for her own witnesses these last weeks, he said to the ancient, and she does not come back empty-handed. Alice, why don't you introduce the witnesses you've brought? Caius snarled. The time for witnesses is past. Cast your vote, Aro. Aro raised one finger to silence his brother, his eyes glued to Alice's face. Alice stepped forward lightly and introduced the strangers. This is Whelan and her nephew, Nawel. Hearing her voice, it was like she'd never left. Caius's eyes tightened as Alice named the relationship between the newcomers. The Volturi witnesses hissed amongst themselves. The vampire world was changing, and everyone could feel it. Speak, Whelan, Aro commanded. Give us the witness you were brought to bear. The slight woman looked to Alice nervously. Alice nodded in encouragement, and Kachiri put her long hand on the little vampire's shoulder. I am Whelan, the woman announced in clear but strangely accented English. As she continued, it was apparent she had prepared herself to tell this story, that she had practiced. It flowed like a well-known nursery rhyme. A century and a half ago, I lived with my people, the Mapuche. My sister was Pire. Our parents named her after the snow on the mountains because of her fair skin. And she was very beautiful, too beautiful. She came to me one day in secret and told me of the angel that found her in the woods that visited her by night. I warned her. Whelan shook her head mournfully. As if the bruises on her skin were not warning enough. I knew it was the Libby Shoman of our legends, but she would not listen. She was bewitched. She told me when she was sure her dark angel's child was growing inside her. I didn't try to discourage her from her plan to run away. I knew even our father and mother would agree that the child must be destroyed, Pire with it. I went with her into the deepest parts of the forest. She searched for her demon angel but found nothing. I cared for her, hunted for her when her strength failed. She ate the animals raw, drinking their blood. I needed no more confirmation of what she carried in her womb. I hoped to save her life before I killed the monster. But she loved the child inside her. She called him Nawel, after the jungle cat. When he grew strong and broke her bones, and loved him still. I could not save her. The child ripped his way free of her, and she died quickly, begging all the while that I would care for her, Nawel. Her dying wish, and I agreed. He bit me, though, when I tried to lift him from her body. I crawled away into the jungle to die. I didn't get far, the pain was too much. But he found me. The newborn child struggled through the underbrush to my side and waited for me. When the pain ended, he was curled against my side, sleeping. I cared for him until he was able to hunt for himself. We hunted the villages around our forest, staying to ourselves. We have never come so far from our home, but Nawel wished to see the child here. Whelan bowed her head when she was finished and moved back so she was partially hidden behind Kachiri. Aro's lips were pursed. He stared at the dark-skinned youth.
Nawel, you are 150 years old, he questioned. Give or take a decade,
he answered in a clear, beautifully warm voice. His accent was barely noticeable. We don't keep track.
And you reach maturity at what age?
About 7 years after my birth, more or less, I was full grown. You have not changed since then? Nahual shrugged. Not that I've noticed. I felt a shudder tremble through Jacob's body. I didn't want to think about this yet. I would wait till the danger was past and I could concentrate.
And your diet, Aro pressed, seeming interested in spite of himself. Mostly blood, but some human food too. I can survive on either.
You were able to create an immortal? As Aro gestured to Whelan, his voice was abruptly intense. I refocused on my shield. Perhaps he was seeking a new excuse.
Yes, but none of the rest can.
A shocked murmur ran through all three groups. Aro's eyebrows shot up.
The rest?
My sisters. Nahual shrugged again. Aro stared wildly for a moment before composing his face.
Perhaps you would tell us the rest of your story, for there seems to be more.
Nahual frowned. My father came looking for me a few years after my mother's death. His handsome face distorted slightly. He was pleased to find me. Nahual's tone suggested the feeling was not mutual. He had two daughters, but no sons. He expected me to join him, as my sisters had. He was surprised I was not alone. My sisters are not venomous, but whether that's due to gender or a random chance, who knows? I already had my family with Whelan, and I was not interested, he twisted the word, in making a change. I see him from time to time. I have a new sister. She reached maturity about 10 years back.
Your father's name? Caius asked through gritted teeth.
Yoham, Nahual answered. He considers himself a scientist. He thinks he's creating a new super race. He made no attempt to disguise the disgust in his tone. Caius looked at me.
Your daughter, is she venomous? He demanded harshly.
No, I responded. Nahual's head snapped up at Aro's question, and his teak eyes turned to bore into my face. Caius looked to Aro for confirmation, but Aro was absorbed in his own thoughts. He pursed his lips and stared at Carlyle, and then Edward, and at last his eyes rested on me.
Caius growled, We take care of the aberration here, and then follow it south, he urged Aro.
Aro stared into my eyes for a long, tense moment. I had no idea what he was searching for or what he found, but after he had measured me for that moment, something in his face changed, a faint shift in the set of his mouth and eyes, and I knew that Aro had made his decision.
Brother, he said softly to Caius, there appears to be no danger. This is an unusual development, but I see no threat. These half-vampire children are much like us, it appears.
Is that your vote? Caius demanded.
It is.
Caius scowled.
And this Yoham, this immortal so fond of experimentation?
Perhaps we should speak with him, Aro agreed.
Stop Yoham if you will, Nahual said flatly. But leave my sisters be. They are innocent. Aro nodded, his expression solemn, and then he turned back to his guard with a warm smile.
Dear ones, he called, we do not fight today.
The guard nodded in unison and straightened out of their ready positions. The mist dissipated swiftly, but I held my shield in place. Maybe this was another trick. I analyzed their expressions as Aro turned back to us. His face was as benign as ever, but unlike before, I sensed a strange blankness behind the facade, as if his scheming was over. Caius was clearly incensed, but his rage was turned inward now. He was resigned. Marcus looked bored. There really was no other word for it. The guard was impassive and disciplined again. There were no individuals among them, just the whole. They were in formation, ready to depart. The Volturi witnesses were still wary. One after another, they departed, scattering into the woods. As their numbers dwindled, the remaining sped up. Soon, they were all gone. Aro held his hands out to us, almost apologetic. Behind him, the larger part of the guard, along with Caius, Marcus, and the silent, mysterious wives, were already drifting quickly away, their formation precise once again. Only the three that seemed to be his personal guardians lingered with him.
"I'm so glad this could be resolved without violence," he said sweetly. "My friend Carlyle, how pleased I am to call you friend again. I hope there are no hard feelings. I know you understand the strict burden that our duty places on our shoulders."
"Leave in peace, Aro," Carlyle said stiffly. "Please remember that we still have our anonymity to protect here, and keep your guard from hunting in this region."
"Of course, Carlyle," Aro assured him. "I am sorry to earn your disapproval, my dear friend. Perhaps in time you will forgive me.
Perhaps in time, if you prove a friend to us again."
Aro bowed his head, the picture of remorse, and drifted backward for a moment before he turned around. We watched in silence as the last four Volturi disappeared into the trees. It was very quiet. I did not drop my shield.
"Is it really over?"
I whispered to Edward. His smile was huge.
"Yes, they've given up. Like all bullies, they're cowards underneath the swagger," he chuckled.
Alice laughed with him.
"Seriously, people, they're not coming back. Everybody can relax now."
There was another beat of silence.
"Of all the rotten luck," Stefan muttered.
And then it hit. Cheers erupted. Deafening howls filled the clearing. Maggie pounded Stefan on the back. Rosalie and Emmett kissed again, longer and more ardently than before. Benjamin and Tia were locked in each other's arms, as were Carmen and Eliezer. Esme held Alice and Jasper in a tight embrace. Carlyle was warmly thanking the South American newcomers who had saved us all. Kachiri stood very close to Safrina and Senna, their fingertips interlocked. Garrett picked Kate up off the ground and swung her around in a circle. Stefan spit on the snow. Vladimir ground his teeth together with a sour expression. And I half-climbed the giant russet wolf to rip my daughter off his back and then crushed her to my chest. Edward's arms were around us in the same second. "Nessie, Nessie, Nessie," I crooned. Jacob laughed his big, barky laugh and poked the back of my head with his nose.
"Shut up," I mumbled.
"I get to stay with you?"
Nessie demanded.
"Forever," I promised her.
We had forever. And Nessie was going to be fine and healthy and strong. Like the half-human Nahuel, in 150 years, she would still be young, and we would all be together. Happiness expanded like an explosion inside me, so extreme, so violent that I wasn't sure I'd survive it.
"Forever," Edward echoed in my ear.
I couldn't speak anymore. I lifted my head and kissed him with a passion that might possibly set the forest on fire. I wouldn't have noticed.
Chapter 39, The Happily Ever After. So it was a combination of things there at the end, but what it really boiled down to was Bella, Edward was explaining. Our family and our two remaining guests sat in the Cullens' great room while the forest turned black outside the tall windows. Vladimir and Stefan had vanished before we'd stopped celebrating. They were extremely disappointed in the way things had turned out. But Edward said that they'd enjoyed the Volturi's cowardice almost enough to make up for their frustration. Benjamin and Tia were quick to follow after Amon and Kevi, anxious to let them know the outcome of the conflict. I was sure we would see them again, Benjamin and Tia at least. None of the nomads lingered. Peter and Charlotte had a short conversation with Jasper, and then they were gone too. The reunited Amazons had been anxious to return home as well. They had a difficult time being away from their beloved rainforest, though they were more reluctant to leave than some of the others.
"You must bring the child to see me," Safrina had insisted. "Promise me, young one."
Nessie had pressed her hand to my neck, pleading as well.
"Of course, Safrina," I'd agreed.
"We shall be great friends, my Nessie,"
the wild woman had declared before leaving with her sisters.
the Irish coven continued the exodus.
Well done, Siobhan, Carlisle complimented her as they said goodbye.
Ah, the power of wishful thinking, she answered sarcastically, rolling her eyes. And then she was serious. Of course this isn't over. The Volturi won't forgive what happened here.
Edward was the one to answer that. They've been seriously shaken. Their confidence is shattered. But yes, I'm sure they'll recover from the blow someday. And then, his eyes tightened. I imagine they'll try to pick us off separately.
Alice will warn us when they intend to strike, Siobhan said in a sure voice. And we'll gather again. Perhaps the time will come when our world is ready to be free of the Volturi altogether.
That time may come, Carlisle replied. If it does, we'll stand together.
Yes, my friend, we will, Siobhan agreed.
And how can we fail when I will it otherwise?
She let out a great peal of laughter.
Exactly, Carlisle said.
He and Siobhan embraced, and then he shook Liam's hand.
Try to find Alistair and tell him what happened. I'd hate to think of him hiding under a rock for the next decade.
Siobhan laughed again. Maggie hugged both Nessie and me, and then the Irish coven was gone. The Denalis were the last to leave, Garrett with them, as he would be from now on, I was fairly sure. The atmosphere of celebration was too much for Tanya and Kate. They needed time to grieve for their lost sister. Whelan and Nahuel were the ones who stayed, though I had expected those last two to go back with the Amazons. Carlisle was deep in fascinated conversation with Whelan. Nahuel sat close beside her, listening while Edward told the rest of us the story of the conflict as only he knew it.
Alice gave Aro the excuse he needed to get out of the fight. If he hadn't been so terrified of Bella, he probably would have gone ahead with their original plan.
Terrified? I said skeptically. Of me? He smiled at me with a look I didn't entirely recognize. It was tender, but also awed and even exasperated.
When will you ever see yourself clearly? He said softly.
Then he spoke louder to the others as well as to me. The Volturi haven't fought a fair fight in about 2,500 years. And they've never, never fought one where they were at a disadvantage. Especially since they'd gained Jane and Alec, they've only been involved with unopposed slaughterings.
You should have seen how we looked to them. Usually, Alec cuts off all sense and feeling from their victims while they go through the charade of a council. That way, no one can run when the verdict is given. But there we stood, ready, waiting, outnumbering them, with gifts of our own, while their gifts were rendered useless by Bella.
Aro knew that with Zafrina on our side, they would be the blind ones when the battle commenced. I'm sure our numbers would have been pretty severely decimated, but they were sure that theirs would be too. There was even a good possibility that they would lose.
They've never dealt with that possibility before.
They didn't deal with it well today.
Hard to feel confident when you're surrounded by horse-sized wolves, Emmett laughed, poking Jacob's arm.
Jacob flashed a grin at him.
It was the wolves that stopped them in the first place, I said.
Sure was, Jacob agreed.
Absolutely, Edward agreed. That was another sight they've never seen. The true children of the moon rarely move in packs, and they are never much in control of themselves. 16 enormous regimented wolves was a surprise they weren't prepared for. Caius is actually terrified of werewolves. He almost lost a fight with one a few thousand years ago and never got over it.
So there are real werewolves? I asked.
With the full moon and silver bullets and all that?
Jacob snorted.
Real? Does that make me imaginary?
You know what I mean.
Full moon, yes, Edward said. Silver bullets, no. That was just another one of those myths to make humans feel like they had a sporting chance.
There aren't very many of them left. Caius has had them hunted into near extinction.
And you never mention this because
it never came up.
I rolled my eyes and Alice laughed, leaning forward. She was tucked under Edward's other arm, to wink at me.
I glared back.
I loved her insanely, of course. But now that I'd had a chance to realize that she was really home, that her defection was only a ruse because Edward had to believe that she'd abandon us, I was beginning to feel pretty irritated with her. Alice had some explaining to do. Alice sighed.
Just get it off your chest, Bella.
How could you do that to me, Alice?
It was necessary.
Necessary? I exploded. You had me totally convinced that we were all going to die. I've been a wreck for weeks.
It might have gone that way, she said calmly, in which case you needed to be prepared to save Nessie.
Instinctively, I held Nessie, asleep now on my lap, tighter in my arms.
But you knew there were other ways too, I accused. You knew there was hope.
Did it ever occur to you that you could have told me everything? I know Edward had to think we were at a dead end for Aro's sake, but you could have told me. She looked at me speculatively for a moment.
I don't think so, she said. You're just not that good an actress.
This was about my acting skills?
Oh, take it down an octave, Bella. Do you have any idea how complicated this was to set up? I couldn't even be sure that someone like Nahuel existed. All I knew was that I would be looking for something I couldn't see. Try to imagine searching for a blind spot. Not the easiest thing I've ever done. Plus, we had to send back the key witnesses like we weren't in enough of a hurry. And then, keeping my eyes open all the time in case you decided to throw me any more instructions? At some point, you're going to have to tell me what exactly is in Rio. Before any of that, I had to try to see every trick the Volturi might come in with and give you what few clues I could so you would be ready for their strategy. And I only had just a few hours to trace out all the possibilities. Most of all, I had to make sure you'd all believe that I was ditching out on you, because Aro had to be positive that you had nothing left up your sleeves, or he never would have committed to an out the way he did. And if you think I didn't feel like a schmuck...
Okay, I interrupted. Sorry. I know it was rough for you, too. It's just that... Well, I missed you like crazy, Alice. Don't do that to me again. Alice's trilling laugh rang through the room, and we all smiled to hear that music once more.
I missed you too, Bella. So forgive me, and try to be satisfied with being the superhero of the day.
Everyone else laughed now, and I ducked my face into Nessie's hair, embarrassed. Edward went back to analyzing every shift of intention and control that had happened in the meadow today, declaring that it was my shield that had made the Volturi run away with their tails between their legs. The way everyone looked at me made me uncomfortable. Even Edward. It was like I had grown 100 feet during the course of the morning. I tried to ignore the impressed looks, mostly keeping my eyes on Nessie's sleeping face and Jacob's unchanged expression. I would always be just Bella to him, and that was a relief. The hardest stare to ignore was also the most confusing one. It wasn't like this half-human, half-vampire Nahuel was used to thinking of me in a certain way. For all he knew, I went around routing, attacking vampires every day, and the scene in the meadow had been nothing unusual at all. But the boy never took his eyes off me. Or maybe he was looking at Nessie. That made me uncomfortable, too. He couldn't be oblivious to the fact that Nessie was the only female of his kind that wasn't his half-sister. I didn't think this idea had occurred to Jacob yet. I kind of hoped it wouldn't soon. I'd had enough fighting to last me for a while. Eventually, the others ran out of questions for Edward, and the discussion dissolved into a bunch of smaller conversations. I felt oddly tired. Not sleepy, of course, but just like the day had been long enough. I wanted some peace, some normality. I wanted Nessie in her own bed. I wanted the walls of my own little home around me. I looked at Edward and felt for a moment like I could read his mind. I could see he felt exactly the same way. Ready for some peace. Should we take Nessie? That's probably a good idea, he agreed quickly. I'm sure she didn't sleep soundly last night, what with all the snoring. He grinned at Jacob. Jacob rolled his eyes and then yawned. It's been a while since I slept in a bed. I bet my dad would get a kick out of having me under his roof again. I touched his cheek. Thank you, Jacob. Anytime, Bella. But you already know that. He got up, stretched, kissed the top of Nessie's head, and then the top of mine. Finally, he punched Edward's shoulder.
See you guys tomorrow. I guess things are going to be kind of boring now, aren't they?
I fervently hope so, Edward said. We got up when he was gone. I shifted my weight carefully so that Nessie was never jostled. I was deeply grateful to see her getting a sound sleep. So much weight had been on her tiny shoulders. It was time she got to be a child again, protected and secure. A few more years of childhood. The idea of peace and security reminded me of someone who didn't have those feelings all the time.
Oh, Jasper? I asked as we turned for the door.
Jasper was sandwiched tight in between Alice and Esme, somehow seeming more central to the family picture than usual.
Yes, Bella?
I'm curious. Why is Jay Jenks scared stiff by just the sound of your name?
Jasper chuckled. It's just been my experience that some kinds of working relationships are better motivated by fear than by monetary gain. I frowned, promising myself that I would take over that working relationship from now on and spare Jay the heart attack that was surely on the way. We were kissed and hugged and wished a good night to our family. The only off note was Nahuel again, who looked intently after us, as if he wished he could follow. Once we were across the river, we walked barely faster than human speed, in no hurry, holding hands. I was sick of being under a deadline, and I just wanted to take my time. Edward must have felt the same.
I have to say, I'm thoroughly impressed with Jacob right now, Edward told me.
The wolves make quite an impact, don't they?
That's not what I mean. Not once today did he think about the fact that, according to Nahuel, Nessie will be fully matured in just 6.5 years.
I considered that for a minute. He doesn't see her that way. He's not in a hurry for her to grow up. He just wants her to be happy.
I know. Like I said, impressive. It goes against the grain to say so, but she could do worse.
I frowned. I'm not going to think about that for approximately 6.5 more years. Edward laughed and then sighed. Of course, it looks like he'll have some competition to worry about when the time comes. My frown deepened. I noticed. I'm grateful to Nahuel for today, but all the staring was a little weird. I don't care if she is the only half-vampire he's not related to.
Oh, he wasn't staring at her. He was staring at you.
That's what it had seemed like, but that didn't make any sense.
Why would he do that?
Because you're alive, he said quietly.
You lost me. All his life, he explained, and he's 50 years older than I am.
Decrepit, I interjected.
He ignored me. He always thought of himself as an evil creation, a murderer by nature. His sisters all killed their mothers as well, but they thought nothing of it. Johann raised them to think of the humans as animals, while they were gods. But Nahuel was taught by Whelan, and Whelan loved her sister more than anyone else. It shaped his whole perspective, and in some ways, he truly hated himself.
That's so sad, I murmured.
And then he saw the three of us, and realized for the first time that just because he is half immortal, it doesn't mean he is inherently evil. He looks at me and sees what his father should have been.
You are fairly ideal in every way, I agreed.
He snorted and then was serious again.
He looks at you and sees the life his mother should have had.
Poor Nahuel, I murmured, and then sighed because I knew I would never be able to think badly of him after this, no matter how uncomfortable his stare made me.
Don't be sad for him. He's happy now. Today he's finally begun to forgive himself.
I smiled for Nahuel's happiness, and then thought that today belonged to happiness. Though Irina's sacrifice was a dark shadow against the white light, keeping the moment from perfection, the joy was impossible to deny. The life I'd fought for was safe again. My family was reunited. My daughter had a beautiful future stretching out endlessly in front of her. Tomorrow I would go see my father. He would see that the fear in my eyes had been replaced with joy, and he would be happy too. Suddenly, I was sure that I wouldn't find him there alone. I hadn't been as observant as I might have been in the last few weeks, but in this moment, it was like I'd known all along. Sue would be with Charlie. the werewolf's mom with the vampire's dad. And he wouldn't be alone anymore. I smiled widely at this new insight. But most significant in this tidal wave of happiness was the surest fact of all. I was with Edward, forever. Not that I'd want to repeat the last several weeks, but I had to admit they'd made me appreciate what I had more than ever. The cottage was a place of perfect peace in the silver-blue night. We carried Nessie to her bed and gently tucked her in. She smiled as she slept. I took Aro's gift from around my neck and tossed it lightly into the corner of her room. She could play with it if she wished. She liked sparkly things. Edward and I walked slowly to our room, swinging our arms between us. "A night for celebrations," he murmured, and he put his hand under my chin to lift my lips to his. "Wait," I hesitated, pulling away. He looked at me in confusion. As a general rule, I didn't pull away. Okay, it was more than a general rule. This was a first. "I want to try something," I informed him, smiling slightly at his bewildered expression. I put my hands on both sides of his face and closed my eyes in concentration. I hadn't done very well with this when Zafrina had tried to teach me before, but I knew my shield better now. I understood the part that fought against separation from me, the automatic instinct to preserve self above all else. It still wasn't anywhere near as easy as shielding other people along with myself. I felt the elastic recoil again as my shield fought to protect me. I had to strain to push it entirely away from me. It took all of my focus. "Bella," Edward whispered in shock. I knew it was working then, so I concentrated even harder, dredging up the specific memories I'd saved for this moment, letting them flood my mind, and hopefully his as well. Some of the memories were not clear, dim human memories, seen through weak eyes and heard through weak ears. The first time I'd seen his face, the way it felt when he'd held me in the meadow, the sound of his voice through the darkness of my faltering consciousness when he'd saved me from James, his face as he waited under a canopy of flowers to marry me, every precious moment from the island, his cold hands touching our baby through my skin, and the sharp memories, perfectly recalled, his face when I'd opened my eyes to my new life, to the endless dawn of immortality, that first kiss, that first night. His lips, suddenly fierce against mine, broke my concentration. With a gasp, I lost my grip on the struggling weight I was holding away from myself. It snapped back like stressed elastic, protecting my thoughts once again. "Oops, lost it," I sighed. "I heard you," he breathed. How did you do that?" "Zafrina's idea. We practiced with it a few times." He was dazed. He blinked twice and shook his head. "Now you know," I said lightly and shrugged. "No one's ever loved anyone as much as I love you." "You're almost right," he smiled, his eyes still a little wider than usual. "I know of just one exception." "Liar." He started to kiss me again, but then stopped abruptly. "Can you do it again?" he wondered. I grimaced. "It's very difficult." He waited, his expression eager. "I can't keep it up if I'm even the slightest bit distracted," I warned him. "I'll be good," he promised. I pursed my lips, my eyes narrowing, then I smiled. I pressed my hands to his face again, hefted the shield right out of my mind, and then started in where I'd left off, with the crystal clear memory of the first night of my new life, lingering on the details. I laughed breathlessly when his urgent kiss interrupted my efforts again. "Damn it," he growled, kissing hungrily down the edge of my jaw. "We have plenty of time to work on it," I reminded him. "Forever and forever and forever," he murmured. "That sounds exactly right to me." And then we continued blissfully into this small but perfect piece of our forever. The end.
Thank you. This is Ileana Kadushin. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Breaking Dawn by Stephanie Meyer. This program was directed by Garrett Scott and produced by Dan Zitt and Aaron Blank. This program was recorded and edited at John Marshall Sound. Text copyright 2008 by Stephanie Meyer. Production copyright 2008, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.